This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own
720 WGN.
Yeah, it's 6:10 in the morning. Steve is off today. He'll be back tomorrow. Hopefully he'll get his second round of golf in for today. I believe he's in a tournament.
Oh, see, I thought he was on a secret mission to save the planet.
Like I said, he's on the secret mission, Dave,
right,
which we can't really talk about.
That's right.
But he'll be back tomorrow. Our parts are with everybody in Indiana last night.
At least five
tornadoes striking. There was a Starbucks in Kokomo that was leveled. They're still suffering from power outages. 22 counties had tornado watches yesterday. Flood watch is still in effect for many of those regions, too.
Have you seen the video of that Starbucks getting absolutely flattened by the storm from, a bar or restaurant right across the parking lot?
Yeah.
It's terrifying.
Absolutely terrifying. We're going to be talking about that a little bit more in depth this morning, too. Our hearts are also with everybody in Italy. ABC's Tom Rivers has been covering this story since yesterday. At least 247 dead, Tom. That's the last number I had. Has that risen since early this morning?
That number is stable right now, but again, they don't update every single hour, so you know it's expected to rise throughout the day. Our people on the ground are talking about the current situation. They're going literally from building to building and using local knowledge to find out exactly who might have been in them. And like they say, roughly 90% of the time they're finding bodies, but we probably saw this yesterday, they found a 10-year-old girl in Pescara del Tronto, one of the three villages hit. 10 years, brought her to the hospital. She's going to be all right. So that's what really makes these rescue guys and gals work and get them inspired and keep them doing what they do very, very well in this critical period, 72 hours after the quake.
Yeah, it was an unbelievable stories last night on World News with David, and we saw the 80-year-old woman who was trapped under the rubble, who was still alive, talking to the rescuers.
Yep.
And then they had pulled a baby from the rubble, too, who was going to be okay, a little girl. These stories are just so harrowing. This is Amatrice, which is kind of a resort area. Normally, there was, 2,000 people in the town, but there could have been up to 10 because they were having a big festival this weekend.
Yeah, their annual spaghetti festival. But again, by Wednesday, you wouldn't have had all 10,000 in. But some people, yes, you're absolutely right, would be trickling in. So again, they don't have hard and firm numbers, just guesses. They're saying, you know, they know what the population is, how many people are coming into town, et cetera, where the hotel's booked, you fill in the blank, but they can kind of do the math that way and try to figure out how many people were there, how many got out.
It's a popular tourism area. Do we know if it's a popular area as far as American tourists who might be there, or any idea about whether Americans were in the area at the time?
Yeah, well, the State Department at this point, working with U.S. Embassy personnel on the ground not far from Rome, they say at this stage of the game, they know of no U.S. deaths or U.S. people missing. And, of course, that could change. But as of right now, they say it looks like there's no U.S. people that were in this area. And, you know, you have to have local knowledge, really, to be there, really. And it's kind of off the beaten path, but it's a beautiful scenic place. It's kind of like going to the lake, I guess, if you're in the Midwest in the States.
Yeah, it's a stunning, stunning area. Tom, do they have the heavy equipment and the manpower that they need to continue these, because they're still search and rescue efforts at this point?
Yeah, they've got what they need at this stage of the game, and more of it's coming in, In fact, our people have been telling me about the roads being very narrow and trying to get ambulances and crews and gear up. But they're doing what they can do. And, of course, the first few days, they don't want to use the heavy-duty stuff because that could actually crush some of these pockets where people potentially could be. But they're using lighter stuff, front-end loaders, that sort of thing, getting down literally to pounding on cement slabs with hammers and waiting for any kind of a noise coming back. So they're going light as it goes at the beginning, but after 3 days, then they move in the big stuff to try to remove some of the larger walls, ceilings, roofs, etc., in the hopes of maybe finding somebody then, but it's diminishing returns as each day passes.
Any reports of aftershocks?
Lots of them. In fact, hundreds. They say, literally, reporters are saying this. The relief workers are doing it. They kind of stop, and they catch their bearings. And so far, nothing has been on the scale of the initial quake. But they're saying they're feeling it, and it'll come and go maybe within 30 seconds, and then, you know, you pause, and then you carry on with your work. So, yeah, that certainly is carrying on.
This was so big, they were saying early on, Tom, that they felt it all the way down about in three different regions, including in Rome, too, by the Colosseum. They felt the shocks.
Exactly. A fairly shallow one. So that energy is dissipated through the surface, and that's where it really travels. You know, compare and contrast with Myanmar, who had an actually a larger quake yesterday, but it was it was much deeper in the ground, and you know, that energy is kind of used up on the way up. So yes, a totally different scenario, but yes, people felt this as far away as you say, certainly in Rome.
Well, Tom, keep us posted, and as always, be safe. Thank you, my friend.
Take care.
All right, we always enjoy talking to ABC. Keep doing that. We always enjoy talking to ABC's Tom Rivers. 247 dead as this as the cleanup efforts and the recovery. They're still trying to search for people trapped underneath the rubble in Amatrice. That's going to continue all day long and
so
all throughout the week.
And this area is about 85 miles from Rome.
Yeah, so it's a mountainous area. Just kind of, you know, when you go kind of to the central portion and you kind of wrap around the mountains, a very, very big wine area. So it's just very sad, you know, and especially with 2,000 people normally in the town, and they added more than 10,000 for the spaghetti festival that was coming up on Saturday.
Mm. Whenever I see stories like this, it's so random what goes on, right? I mean, anything can change on a moment's notice, and then you know, you see an 8-year-old girl being pulled out from the rubble.
Wasn't that crazy?
I mean, can you imagine being in there and trying just to have the will to continue to make noise and yell for help and stay with yourself? I mean, that is just beyond terrifying.
I was surprised they found that 80-year-old woman, too. Did you guys see that? And they were handing her a cell phone through the rubble. And they were talking in Italian, of course, but the translator was saying, I'm okay, I'm okay. You know, I just want some water. And they're trying to get water to her. It's just harrowing.
And they have our four-legged friends there helping, which is, you know, they used to never have these teams that would respond in, but these search dogs that respond in from all over the world, including here. That's, you know, they find living people very quickly.
Yeah, and we'll keep you posted, too. I know there's an organization, I believe it's in Downers Grove, and they're getting together just supplies and clothes and things like that they're going to be shipping over, too. So we'll keep you updated on the relief efforts as well.
What to see, what's out at the show, I need to know the place and when. But there's one guy on GN's Cochran Show, and what he says will make us stay or go. He is Nick at Night, DiGiulio. He knows what shows are good, what's stinking. He's the only one who's in the know. I need to know what Nick is thinking. I need to know what Nick is thinking.
Let's find out what Nick is thinking. Nick D with his twice weekly look at the movies and what's coming up on a big weekend. A lot of new movies coming out. Morning, Nick.
Morning.
All right, so your guy's got a movie coming out this weekend.
Matthew McConaughey?
No.
No?
No, Matthew McConaughey has a voice in a movie that came out last weekend.
What are you thinking of?
Isn't he? Yeah, go ahead.
You're thinking of the Lincoln commercials.
Yeah, maybe that's it with the two dogs.
he's one of the voices in Kubo and the Two Strings, which is easily the best movie that's out right now. This incredible animated film that is just beautiful and gorgeous. And he and Charlize Theron are the main voices in that. But as far as I know, he doesn't have a movie this week.
As long as we're on Matthew McConaughey, not literally, sorry, Nick, the new Lincoln commercial where he falls backwards into the pool. Have you seen it? Isn't that fantastic?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I don't understand why he does these commercials, except for the money, but that's free Lincolns.
I don't understand the commercials usually anyway. He's fallen into the pool, and then it starts raining. Maybe it's supposed to be, you know, the analogy of the rain falling in on the car. It's bizarre.
No offense, Nick, but he is one weird dude.
He's awesome.
He's a good looking guy. He's a good looking strange dude, though. Wow. All right, enough of Nick's obsession. Mechanic Resurrection. What's this?
This is the latest Jason Statham movie, and it's a sequel to a movie that he got killed in. So that's why it's called Mechanic Resurrection.
Oh.
I don't know. Statham, Jessica Alba, and apparently Tommy Lee Jones lost a bet. He's in it. So it's a sequel to The Mechanic. It's a Jason Statham movie, so it's essentially going to be 90 minutes of him punching people in the throat.
Okay. So are you hip on that or no? Is this good,
no,
bad?
I've had my fill of Jason Statham. I'm pretty much done with Jason Statham. Although I loved him. I really loved him in the Melissa McCarthy movie Spy.
Yeah, I did too.
He's very funny in that. And but that was the only time in my life I ever said, boy, I could have used more Jason Statham.
Hey, there might be a Spy 2. You never know.
Yeah, well, they're working on it, actually. Yep.
Are they? One can only hope, right? What's Southside with you?
Southside with You is the only one that I've seen already of the four big ones that are opening. Southside with You is this lovely film about the gay and first date that Michelle Robinson and Barack Obama ever went on in the summer of 1989.
Oh, yeah. You know what? I saw some sort of a clip, or I think Dean had done an interview with the actors, and boy, they hired dialect coaches. And you wouldn't think, okay, you wouldn't need, I would think you would just need that for I guess, particular accents, like a British accent or an Irish brogue. But, boy, he nailed Barack Obama.
Well, it's a really lovely movie. And I just want to make it clear that it doesn't matter what your politics are. This is just a really lovely film and a really nice love story. Really quaint, really well done. It doesn't matter whether you know or not you are pro or anti-Obama.
Mm-hmm.
This is a movie about two people who at the beginning of a really wonderful relationship and how it unfolds on their first date. And as many people know, they met in the summer of 1989, and their first date, they went to go see Do the Right Thing. So that entire day and the date is recounted here. And it's just a really, really terrific film. And it also... It really does a nice job of hinting at the relationship to come and dropping hints as to what would happen with to these two extraordinary people. It's also a really wonderful local film as well. So I highly recommend Southside with You.
I really want to see that. I do agree with you. Put your politics aside. It looks like a beautiful love story. And say what you want, but they're great parents. They've really tried to shelter Sasha and Malia. Did they bring up the girls in the movie, Nick?
Well, no, it's because it's their first
okay.
date. So,
okay.
You know.
It's not like a flashing ahead or anything like that.
No.
Okay.
It's just
This isn't a prequel, is it? Is it? So John Legend produced this, didn't he?
Yes, he did. John Legend produced it, did a song for it as well, and has been doing a lot of press for it. He's been out, because the actors in it are all unknown, the people that they put in there. And like you said, Andrea, they went for people who weren't, they weren't faces, they weren't well known.
Yeah.
They went for people who, so you would not be caught up in watching an actor that you've seen before imitating Barack Obama. Like if they had hired someone who everybody knew, you would go, oh, well, this well-known actor is just doing an imitation of Barack Obama.
Yeah.
Here's a guy that you've never really seen before. He's been in a few movies. But it's a really sweet film.
Like I said, your guy's got a movie coming out this week, Robert De Niro.
Oh, that guy.
That guy.
That guy. The guy who stopped caring about making movies about 20 years ago. Although this one I'm kind of curious about. This is, it's called Hands of Stone. And in it, he plays a famous boxing promoter who came out of retirement to coach, not a boxing promoter, a boxing manager and a trainer,
mm-hmm.
And a trainer to come out of retirement to train and manage Roberto Duran. And the film is about that part of his career where he had a rivalry with Sugar Ray Leonard. Sugar Ray Leonard played by Usher in this film. And Edgar Ramirez plays Roberto Duran, and De Niro is in it as well. And it's basically the story of Roberto Duran and his conflict and his fights with Sugar Ray Leonard, personal life, and how it affected this 72-year-old boxing manager and trainer who came out of retirement. I hear good things, not great things about it. But it looks like a movie that Robert De Niro is actually going to act in, as opposed to these horrible comedies like Dirty Grandpa and some of the other horrible things he's been doing lately.
I'm
but
with you.
This
on
one
that.
Looks like it, yeah. This one looks like it's going to be more in vain with the kind of good stuff that we know De Niro for.
Nick, why are filmmakers so fascinated by boxing?
Well, it's a real great allegory about life, about winning in life. And of course, everybody loves the underdog tale. It's a cliche that's been around since the inception of movies, and everyone really likes the underdog. You want to root for the underdog. And it's a great allegory about life. Whenever there's a boxing movie, like Raging Bull, for instance, isn't really a boxing movie. It's about the redemption of a man through violence. And you can go down all kinds of avenues with boxing movies. Then people can immediately identify with what you're trying to do because the boxing movie is just so beloved, you know?
Speaking of boxing and fighting, Fight Club, your next movie club is Tuesday the 6th, right?
Tuesday, September 6th, Fight Club with Brad Pitt and Edward Norton. And it's only $10 to get in. Parking is free. And it's going to be great. If you've never seen this movie on the big screen, it's remarkable. And we have a beautiful theater with 4K digital projection and sound. We meet at 7 o'clock at Bogart's, which is the restaurant on the second floor, have some dinner. You guys can have cocktails. The movie starts at 8. I'll introduce it, then we'll do a big Q&A and a talk afterwards. I really love Fight Club. It's one of the best movies of the 90s, and very excited about it. It's Tuesday, September 6th, and you can go to carmike.com, C-A-R. M-I-K-E, carmike.com for tickets. They're on sale now.
Love that movie. Go see it. Nick, I have an idea for you for favors. You can take the pink soap and just have Nick D kind of embossed in there.
I think that's a good idea.
Yeah.
Now I have to come up with some human fat in order to make that soap. That's all I need.
That's all we need. Hey, Nick, thanks. We miss you. Thank you, Nick.
All right, buddy. Take care.
All right. That's Nick. He is awesome. We love Nick. And go see Flight Club September 6th. We'll have the big story with Vic coming up after this, 720 WGN.
The Steve Cochran Show.
Hillary Clinton is a bigot who sees people of color only as votes, not as human beings worthy of a better future. She's going to do nothing for African Americans. She's going to do nothing for the Hispanics. She's only going to take care of herself, her husband, her consultants, her donors. These are the people she cares about. She doesn't care what her policies have done to your communities.
That's the Donald. That was yesterday. You know, what did we say? Well, we've said this every single day. Just when you think it can't get crazier, the name calling can't get worse. It does.
It does.
Hillary Clinton now being called a bigot by Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
We're joined at this time every week by our good friend, Chuck Todd from Meet the Press. Good morning, Chuck.
Good morning.
Do you ever just run out of words? Do you ever just do a shake your head moment and think, okay, 73 more days till this election?
Every day that I wake up. It is.
All right, what's your take?
This is a campaign that I do every morning. I pull the covers back over my head.
Oh, we do too. That's fun. We should all do it together. Yeah. Have a big sleepover and do the same thing.
Exactly.
Pajama party and popcorn. All right, so what do you make of this latest brouhaha?
Well, I mean, you know, Trump throwing that out. I think he was wasting his time going into Jackson, Mississippi. This is not how you reach out. This is not how you make an effort. He's missed out on every single, he has been invited to by every single major African-American and Hispanic organization, some that are very center-right, and he has declined every single invitation. U.S. Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, the National Urban League, places that every single Republican nominee has spoken to in the modern era. So to do this in Mississippi just seems it was totally, you know, just an attempt to, I guess, get a soundbite out there and check a box. But the bigger news is Trump flip-flopping on immigration. I think that is testing, you know, the only reason he's a Republican nominee is that he took a hardline stance on immigration.
Mm-hmm.
That's what got him traction. And Ann Coulter, who is a big Trump supporter, is beating the heck out of him for this.
Sure.
It's going to be interesting to see how many of his diehard supporters, like Ann Coulter, Laura Ingraham, people like that, who have been with him just on the immigration issue, whether they stick by him on this one.
Are you hearing any response from voters on that? I mean, because, again, I was going to ask you that, too. That was his stance. Hardcore Republicans saying, yes, we want immigration reform, many in favor of the so-called Trump wall. What is the response from voters so far? Are they happy that he's flip-flopping on this? Or do you think this maybe could be a move to gain some voters on the other side?
I think it's too early to tell. I think this needs to sink in. I think it's too early to see how this is going to resonate and all that. I think, but it is, you know, you would say on one hand, well, this would be a standard thing to do. You run right in the primaries, you run center, you know, but on this issue, which is the single issue that essentially got him traction, I think he's playing with fire.
All right, let me ask you this, too. Donald Trump hammering his home as America First slogan on Wednesday by presenting the presidential election as a chance for voters to redeclare American independence. To that end, he's enlisting the help of Nigel Farage.
Yeah.
Any impact, any effect? Does anyone care? Do people know who Nigel Farage is?
Cares. I don't think people know who Nigel Farage is. I mean, look, this is the imprint of Steve Bannon, the former Breitbart guy who is now running the campaign. This is, you know, he believes that this nationalist message is what is the future of, is a future political movement. And I think Farage is a reminder that at least Bannon, and maybe Trump will view this too, that this losing isn't a big deal to Trump and Bannon as long as they create and fertilize this political movement.
A firestorm?
So this is, for long-term nationalist political movement.
Meantime, Chuck, Hillary Clinton's focus right now on fundraising and with a pretty good deal of success?
Sure, but they're not, you know, the Clinton Foundation stuff's a total mess. The way this was, there's one time, you know, sometimes you see a campaign mess something up and you think, well, geez, it just hit them over the last 2 weeks. You know, they're responding in real time. They knew this foundation stuff was going to be a problem.
Mm-hmm.
For 10 years. I mean, Obama basically ran against them. When Obama, when President Obama wanted Hillary Clinton to be Secretary of State, his top advisors were absolutely pulling their hair out over the Clinton Foundation. And they had to, you know, worried about the potential conflicts of interest that it presented. These were Democrats worried about this with Hillary Clinton. This is not a new issue. His chief, people that she hired on the campaign early on kept telling her, you need to do something about this early. You don't want to look like you're being reactive in the moment too late in the campaign. Well, lo and behold, they look like they're reacting too late in the campaign, and they look like they have something to hide.
All right, so Trump continues to hammer away at the Clinton Foundation. Of course, they maintain it's a charitable organization, which it is, which has raised millions of dollars for causes overseas. But have they done a good enough job in separating themselves from that?
No, and I think that's what they – look, it is something Dick Lugar, former senator from Indiana, and John Kerry, when he was on the Foreign Relations Committee, both said it doesn't matter – that the Clinton Foundation says, you know, they don't do any extra favors for donors and this like that. It's donors, many of them believe it is a way in Clinton world, that if you want access to her, you want to be a good foundation donor and all this. And so just the illusion of that sitting out there creates the potential for conflict. Why they didn't have a plan ready 3 years ago to have the Gates Foundation run the Clinton Foundation for a while? Or, you know, something like that.
Sure.
But, you know, I can tell you this. There are plenty of people in Clinton's campaign that are advising her to do these things. This is coming from Bill and Hillary. Everybody in that campaign, not named Clinton, knows what they should be doing with the foundation. But this is a candidate-driven decision.
Yeah, they're certainly not making it any easier for Hillary Clinton and her campaign.
Nope.
Chuck, thank you. As always, meet the press on Sundays. You want to preview the show?
We're finally back.
Yes.
The Olympics are
the Olympics.
Woo!
That's right. So we'll be doing our own marathon.
All right, good. No offense to the Olympics.
Still working on it.
We're glad you're back, my friend.
Thank you.
Thanks, sir.
He's the best. There's nobody better. Chuck Todd from Meet the Press. That is such an awesome show. I love it.
Yeah, they've been gone for a few weeks.
I miss them.
The Olympics.
I enjoy the Olympics, but I miss Meet the Press. A little bit of a news junkie that way.
The Steve Cochran Show.
In Howard County. There are approximately 15 homes that have been damaged, as well as some local businesses. In Montgomery County, we just learned that there's some 30 homes that have been damaged. It is truly remarkable that there are such a few number of injuries or worse in the wake of this storm.
650-720 WGN is the Steve Cochran Show. Andrea Darlis and Dave Ennett holding down the ship for Steve. He'll be back tomorrow. That was Indiana Governor Mike Pence, who took a break from campaigning with Donald Trump yesterday. He was talking to reporters on his plane as he was actually heading back to Indiana. to check out the devastation. So we talked a little bit earlier about the Starbucks in Kokomo that was leveled. Tom Skilling was calling that an EF3. So a really, really strong tornadoes. 22 counties have had tornado watches in effect last night, and the flood watches are still in effect. They did have images of 5 tornadoes, in one in Woodburn, another in Kokomo, another in Wells, another in Monroe, and another in Dillman. In Ohio, 5 counties were affected as well by those twisters. So just a lot of cleanup going on there today.
Kokomo, I believe, is just, it's north of Indianapolis, I think about 40 miles, and it's due east of Lafayette, Indiana. And there is video, and you may have seen it. It's all over social media. Video of a Starbucks in Kokomo getting flattened as the Starbucks is hit by the tornado. The video taken from an establishment across, it looks like it's across the parking lot.
Yeah.
And it's just chilling. And it's amazing that nobody was badly injured.
Yeah. And you know what? I should have prefaced it by saying there have been no fatalities that we know of so far. And minor injuries. And if you see, as you said, Dave, and you were looking at this picture too, Mark, a picture of that Starbucks, it is literally flattened like a pancake. And there were people inside at the time. They managed to get out, thankfully.
Well, I watched the video Dave was talking about, and I just can't imagine being in that position. Your life is on the line. I'm going to get out my phone and document what's going on. And then the reality, I think, at some point has to set in, oh, this could be real trouble, right? And, I mean, that's what happened on the video. Whoever was taking it dives underneath the counter there, realizing, okay, I can't stand up and see, look out the window anymore because this could be it. I mean, I just can't imagine what that would feel like unless you were actually in the situation. Like, I think we're all just living our little bubble here. And then
to be in a situation like that, they were doing, actually, we're doing a segment for House Smarts this weekend, tornado preparedness. And remember when you were younger and you were in school, at least we did here in Chicago, you would do the tornado drills and you'd go under your desk and you'd have to.
It's my favorite part of school.
Brace yourself. The tornado drills.
Yes. We did those, but we called them air raid drills,
right?
Because that's what they were.
And during the,
that was the duck
World
and
War
cover.
One.
No,
boy, that was
okay.
I'm sorry, sit in the chair and it happens. I don't know.
It's during like the Cold
through
War.
Osmosis.
All right.
Back in the Civil War days. It was North versus South.
But no, I mean.
No, it's seriously, yeah.
It's amazing how much, and we see this all the time. We've talked to Tom Skilling about it.
Yeah.
About how there is so much video recording of tornadoes now. But this tornado in Kokomo, all over, I was online last night, all over the internet. You can find so many different angles of these storms going through, and I mean, it's crazy.
But you're right, Mark. People now stop, and at least they stop, we're hoping, and take a video or take a cell phone picture or do a Facebook Live, you know. And
maybe there's a certain comfort in it. I'm taking this video. I feel like you're with me. I'm somehow just getting some warmth from the world because I'm taking this video and, okay, look what I'm seeing out there. Please, please, please let me survive this. We're all in it together. Something like that. That's my deep look at why you would take a video at that moment.
Well, here's something to think about, too. When you're sitting in an EF3, which is what Skilling called it last night, EF3, they're ranked categories, of course, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 3 is bad, meaning the winds were as high as 165 miles an hour. So that's something to think about before you go ahead and shoot the cell phone
Well,
video.
On the cell phone video, it looks like a bar. It looks like a sports bar. And the TVs are on, and they're showing baseball. And 1 second, you can see the bar, the lights are on, everything seems somewhat normal. Then the power goes out, and then the Starbucks gets flattened.
Yeah.
And that's when they kept rolling. I mean, at that point, I would have been under a table or under a desk or something.
I would have been too. That's crazy. Howard County, that's where Kokomo is, they have declared a state of emergency, Governor Pence has.
Well, and you're talking about, you know, people's homes being damaged to 45 homes.
Yeah.
I mean, again, what's that like? You go to work or you go to do whatever you do in a day and you come home and your home is not there. I mean, that's just brutal.
Have you guys ever been through a tornado? Have you actually lived through one or been in a structure where a tornado has gone over?
No. No.
We did one time. It was the year of the Plainfield tornado, and I was living in the south suburbs. I was younger, obviously. We heard it come over. It didn't. It hit our neighborhood. One house in the whole neighborhood was destroyed. There was a lot of roof damage and wind damage to the other homes. But it was like, it just sounded like a jumbo jet going by. Very scary feeling. And we were all in the basement, of course.
I was out, I think back in the day, maybe going to do a high school play-by-play football game and around DeKalb and being on some single-lane road, and it was rolling in. I'm like, what am I going to do? I got a field to my right, a field to my left, and a storm rolling in at me. I mean, you're supposed to go in, I guess, you know, the ditch. I mean, I'm going to get out of my car and lay down in that ditch?
No.
That's not really something that I was wanting to do at all.
No, not at all. Now, if it was an earthquake, we learned yesterday, because none of us have ever been through an earthquake. Earthquake preparedness is where you go out. You would go outside the car and brace your. I've never been through one, but what were our people were saying yesterday when they were calling in, that you stand, you kind of just brace yourself on the ground. You don't really or go between a door frame. Yeah.
You stand out there and you say, "Bring it! I've got
bring
this.
It.
Let's go."
like Kevin Bacon in Tremors. Boy, talk about that 80s reference. All right, so at least 29,000 people still without power in Kokomo, 11,000 people without power across, 11,000 additional without power throughout the state of Indiana. Mike Pence is going to be there today. Again, many areas declared a state of emergency so they can be eligible now for state and federal funding.
And kudos to you and to Lou and House Smarts for doing a show on this.
Yeah, we're going to be doing it on Friday.
Know, you don't really know what to do. You kind of have an idea.
Yeah, it was all my idea.
Oh, it's a great idea.
Okay, it was the producer's idea. It was Regan's idea.
I assumed it was your idea.
To give him credit. So what do you have there?
Nothing.
Oh, I thought you were going to be reading that.
No, am I?
Okay.
No.
Well, you can read it after this, WGN. Okay.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show.
720 WGN.
7:11 in the morning. Happy Thursday to you. Dave Bennett, Andrea Darlis, in for Steve Cochran. Steve will be back tomorrow. Is that a secret mission? Is that better?
I think that's better. I think that's the best way to say it.
Mark Carman with us as well in studio, handling sports. We'll talk a little later on about the name change at the Cell. I know you guys are itching to talk about that, especially the Carms over here.
The rate. Let's go. I'm in. Love the move.
We played a cut last hour about Donald Trump calling Hillary Clinton a bigot, the rhetoric heating up there. Boy, the rhetoric's really heating up in the state Senate race, U.S. Senate race in Illinois with Mark Kirk and Tammy Duckworth. Rick Pearson, our friend from the Chicago Tribune. Morning, Rick.
Good morning.
This has been your world for the past couple of weeks. Kirk and Duckworth.
Yeah, and it's only just the beginning. And if it's like this now, you can imagine what it's going to be as we get closer to November 8th.
So. Right, right. And these two, I mean, obviously not friends, never have been. You knew it was it's been getting amped up in the past couple of weeks. But what was the deal yesterday where Mark Kirk accused Tammy Duckworth of mocking stroke victims?
Well, this all goes back to last week where Mark Kirk appeared before the State Journal Register editorial board in Springfield right before Republican Day of the State Fair, and he likened the U.S. $400 million payment to Iran for release of the at the time prisoners were being released there as being ransom. And given that the money was in euros and francs, those kinds of things, he labeled the president of the United States as the drug dealer in chief. So when this came to light over the weekend, that prompted Tammy Duckworth to basically say that when you look at a string of verbal gaffes that Kirk has made, that she views him to be unhinged. And, well, when you look in the dictionary at what the term unhinged means, that means mentally unbalanced. So Kirk yesterday, both of them appeared at an agricultural forum down in McLean County in central Illinois, and Kirk basically said that Tammy Duckworth is mocking stroke victims.
Okay, so that's a bit of a reach. What do you think? How would you take that?
Well, I mean, you have this unique dynamic here of two candidates that have disabilities. And so when you look at Tammy Duckworth, and we all know her story and the fact that she lost her legs and flying a helicopter in Iraq, that, you know, you have one disabled person accusing another disabled person of mocking a disability.
So has she responded now to Kirk's suggestion that she's denigrating stroke victims?
The Duckworth campaign, since Kirk spoke after she did, she didn't directly respond, but the Duckworth campaign said that that's a reach, and that, frankly, when you look at Kirk's history of gaffes and misstatements and exaggerations, that that's occurred throughout his entire public career, and it hasn't just been limited to the stroke that he suffered in 2012.
So, Rick, speaking of backing down, has Kirk backed down from his comments that he made when he called President Obama the drug dealer-in-chief?
He's not backing down at all. He said that if anyone is unhinged, it's the Obama administration for making that payment. And, this is becoming a race where certainly Kirk is focusing on the issue of national security as his key to try to win a state that it's going to be a very difficult time in a state that obviously trends very Democratic in presidential years. And it would be an outlier and a difficult uphill battle for Kirk to take that state, especially in a year when you've got Hillary Clinton on the ballot. You're seeing the Democrats at the top coalesce, Bernie Sanders out on the campaign trail for Hillary Clinton. It's going to be a very, very interesting dynamic. And, Kirk is viewed as one of the most vulnerable, if not the most vulnerable, Republican senator seeking reelection this year. Democrats seizing on the controversies around Donald Trump feel that they have a real chance to retake the U.S. Senate, and the road to that retaking goes right through Illinois.
So that would point towards things getting even more heated here over the last 8 weeks or so?
Oh, I think there's no doubt about that, Dave. And, one of the interesting factors is when you look at places where Republicans are there's been a lot of talk about, should the Republican National Committee give up on Trump and go look at the down ballot races, like for U.S. Senate and for Congress, and devote their resources there? That's one of the things we really haven't seen here in Illinois on either side. There is some outside money coming in. There's a super PAC that's aligned with Mark Kirk, but we're not seeing these big, big dollars that we're seeing in some of the other states where the race is contested. And, we have to wonder, too, if this isn't a factor of not just as much the RNC having questions about the viability of Kirk's campaign, but also Democrats may be feeling they're in such good shape they don't need to necessarily pour in lots of money for Tammy Duckworth.
Well, the beat goes on. Great writing, Rick. We can follow you at ChicagoTribune.com. And what's your Twitter handle?
It's at Rap30.
All right. And this weekend show?
This weekend on the Sunday Spin, we'll be talking to Matt Strawn, Pat Brady's partner at Next Generation Strategies, and Matt's former Iowa Republican chairman. And while Hillary's doing seems to be doing well in some of these swing states, even some red states, Iowa remains a toss-up. And we'll be talking to Matt about what's going on in neighboring Iowa.
All right. Thank you, Rick.
Thanks,
as
Rick.
Always.
Thank you.
All right. He's the best. It's Rick Pearson. You can hear the Sunday Spin right here on 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Why was it okay for the Clinton Foundation to accept foreign donations when you were Secretary of State, but it wouldn't be okay if you were president?
Well, what we did when I was Secretary of State, as I said, went above and beyond anything that was required, anything that any charitable organization has to do. Now, obviously, if I am president, there will be some unique circumstances, and that's why the foundation has laid out additional unprecedented
But didn't those unique circumstances exist when you were Secretary of State?
If I am elected.
Didn't those unique circumstances exist?
No. Look, Anderson, I know there's a lot of smoke and there's no fire.
Oh, I think there's a little bit of a fire. Wow.
Was she in the waiting room at her doctor's office to get the latest diagnosis?
That's Hillary Clinton talking to Anderson Cooper. She actually called into his show. Those extraneous voices you hear. Eric Adelstein, Chris Roebling in studio today. Pat Brady's actually taking his daughter back to college today.
Yeah, this one's going for the first time.
Oh, and then his other daughter is a fresh person, and then his other daughter is already at Arizona.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Chris, thank you for stepping in. We appreciate you being here.
Great to be here. Thank you.
All right. Let's get right to it. Let's talk Clinton Foundation. Did she do
it? I mean, even by Clinton filth standards. And the Clinton filth standard is pretty well.
Just move up a little bit.
The Clinton filth standard, ladies and gentlemen, is pretty well established, even by those standards. This gets to the integrity really not just of Hillary, which we all understand where that is, but the integrity of her office as Secretary of State. I mean, to gain access, the Associated Press now has shown the easiest way to gain access if you're a private individual representing some sort of private issue was to be a big contributor to the Clinton Foundation. And yet the Clinton campaign wants to repeat incessantly, like some 14th century monks chanting or something, there's no impropriety. There's no impropriety. But Eric, you know that they were selling access. And the way you got access was to pay. You played at the State Department with Hillary by paying at the foundation with Bill and his speaking fees.
Well, I don't know that. I mean, when you have a Nobel Prize winner who pretty much has access to every Secretary of State or foreign minister in the world, who ends up having a meeting with the U.S. Secretary of State, and they include that on the list. Look, let me step back for a second. I think Chris has been struggling to get out of bed every morning thinking about Donald Trump every day. And then finally, when the press says this race is over, so let's try to invent more of a story to kind of make this thing competitive, he leaps out of bed and says, I'm going to join the Steve Bannons and the knuckle draggers and crawl out from under our rocks and say all these theories and conspiracies and all this alt-conservative, you know, garbage. Look, the optics are not great. I will acknowledge that. But if we want to start measuring integrity, we want to start measuring trustworthiness, we want to start measuring responsibility in terms of who's going to govern this country, the Clinton versus Trump analysis, I mean, I think as the polls show, most Americans do that. The final point I would say is I think what gets lost in this debate is what was the money at the Clinton Foundation used for?
Right.
It was used to create jobs. It was used to eradicate disease. You can laugh, Chris, but it saved millions of lives, does a lot of good things.
It hasn't saved millions of lives. Come on.
It has.
And by the way, I want to stipulate, I love this guy. Okay.
Yeah,
I remember when he was explaining Clinton filth in the first Clinton administration. Eric Edelstein is one of the greats. Okay, so let's get that. But the problem here now is that it's no longer the vast right-wing conspiracy. You have the Associated Press that is making this statement. And if there was nothing to hide, I think the pins come out from beneath Eric's argument here, because had there been nothing to hide, the Clinton State Department would not have fought the Associated Press for not one, not two, but 3 years. For 3 years, the AP was trying to get this stuff out of the Clinton State Department. Had there been nothing to hide, Hillary would have been shoveling it over. Eric and I have both sent out press releases. When we've got something we're proud of, we get on the phone to Dave, or we get on the phone to Andrea or Steve Cox. We say, hey, here's some great news. They were in court battling tooth and nail to prevent any of this stuff from getting out. So Steve's got to argue from that. But it's not just the AP. It's not the right-wing conspiracy. Here's Al Hunt. I mean, there is nobody more liberal, more dedicated to the Democratic side of the national debate than Albert Hunt, who used to be of the Wall Street Journal. Hillary Clinton's deepening trust deficit in the once world's greatest newspaper, still greatest newspaper in the country, the Chicago Tribune.
Look how excited Chris is.
You picked this
He's been just sloughing along for months having to defend Donald Trump and all this craziness. And look how excited he is now. I'm glad he's got a day. Good for you, Chris.
Surface.
Good
no,
for
you. There's a great discussion. On the surface, the Clinton Foundation should have probably been run kind of like the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, maybe by an outside entity that probably can be agreed on, right, Eric?
Look, in all seriousness, yeah. I've said this for a long time. I think the optics are bad. I do. And I do think they should have done additional things. I don't think this rises to the level of some great election-changing scandal, particularly when you've got this crazy group of people running a crazy guy's campaign who now all of a sudden, who ran the entire spring on deport every undocumented alien, who now is going to say that's not his position anymore. I mean, it's only in 2016, in this sort of Alice in Wonderland, what's up is down, does that even pass for political discourse? So, look, I think the optics are bad. I've said it all along. I'm not going to defend that. I will defend the work the Clinton Foundation has done, because it is good work.
It is.
And this is not like people personally profiting from this. But the bottom line is, this election is a choice between whether you want someone who's kind of unhinged, to use the word of the day, and irresponsible and dangerous to run the United States of America or someone as proven as Hillary Clinton.
I can't believe it. Eric is now attacking stroke victims. No, I'm kidding.
No,
all right, so now
we'll get into that too.
But I want to on the Clinton Foundation. I want to say that it has done some good work. There is no question about that. I don't contest that. But mainly, the Clinton Foundation has served as a place for Clinton-related political consultants to get very rich consulting contracts, you know, sort of business class travel all over the world to meet with important people and go to snazzy hotels. And there are a lot of other organizations that could do that. And on the in terms of personally profiting, I don't say that Bill and Hillary have profited a dime from the foundation. However, I think all five of us at this table can understand that Bill Clinton, eloquent as he has always been, right, on the day after Hillary took the oath and became Secretary of State, he didn't become twice as eloquent as he had been, but his speaking fees were twice as high. Now, this is Chicago. We were not born yesterday. We understand how these things go down. She becomes Secretary of State. He doubles his fees. You do the math.
I thought you were a free market economist guy.
I'm telling
you. Don't you think what the market can bear? Is it supply and demand?
I'm just saying.
Hold
that thought. You got to understand.
Hold
and I don't say
thought.
This is changing the election, but nobody should say the election is decided on the 5th of August.
Right, 73 days to go, 72 actually. Eric Adelstein, Chris Roebling, our politics roundtable continues. After this, 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
Polling numbers for Donald Trump are looking pretty bad, aren't they, at the moment?
Just the cherry-picked polling numbers that are put out there by media outlets that are also bent on his destruction. Donald Trump performs consistently better in online polling, where a human being is not talking to another human being about what he or she may do in the election.
Why is that, do you think?
It's because it's become socially desirable, especially if you're a college-educated person in the United States of America, to say that you're against Donald Trump. The hidden Trump vote in this country is a very significant proposition.
Have you been able to put a number on that?
Yes.
What do you think that is?
I can't discuss it.
Oh, come on.
No, it's a project we're doing internally. I call it the undercover Trump voter, but it's real.
Seems there's something every day.
A little disconnect, right?
Yeah. That's
Kellyanne Conway, Trump's new campaign manager.
Brigadoon.
All right, so what do you, you know, we're 72 days out. I'm really looking as a voter for specifics at this point. Not, well, I can't discuss that. Well, I can't talk about that. All right, Eric, let's start with you. Thoughts? Comments?
Well, again,
we're going to get into the Trump
side. It's this upside down world. You have the Trump campaign installed a Republican pollster. Kellyanne Conway's a pollster who goes on national TV and cites invisible polls that don't exist as a rationale for why they have a path to win. And, you know, it doesn't even really get that question because it rolls out of the Trump campaign. Look, I think we've said this before. You know, I think that first debate in September is going to be maybe the most watched television event since the MASH finale. And I just think maybe because of the train wreck factor or just the stakes or the amount of people talking about this. And I think when you're in, and Chris knows this, when you're in that presidential debate format, and they're usually either 90 minutes or 2 hours, you get into a lot of detail. And it's going to be interesting, both from the expectations game. People think Hillary will do well, and Trump's, that's not so much his strength. So then you try to lower those expectations. But regardless of that, you're going to see two people on the stage who want to be commander-in-chief of the free world having to answer really tough, specific questions about what they would do. And then I think you will get those kind of answers you're looking for.
Three debates currently scheduled. We're talking to Eric Adelstein and Chris Roebling, our political experts, our Political Thursday Roundtable. All right, let's get to Trump calling Hillary a bigot.
Can I just say one quick thing?
Yeah,
about
please.
Poll? There is social acceptability as a bias in poll results. Okay, and so Kellyanne Conway is citing something that is well noted in the literature. In fact, Milt Rosenberg, longtime WGN radio talk show host, venerable and member of the Hall of Fame out here, he did a lot of academic work identifying those issues. Okay. But I agree with Eric that if you're going to go on TV and you're going to start talking about that, you've got to be able to complete the story. I think that Trump, yesterday Trump had one of the leaders of the Brexit campaign.
Nigel Farage.
Yes. Yeah. Joining him down in Alabama, mm-hmm. I think, or Mississippi. And Mr. Farage said, you know, it's easy to be counted out, But I know what it's like when you're counted out by the elites and everybody says you're going to lose, but then you cross the finish line first. Okay. And I think people ought to bear in mind there have been a series of elections in Scotland and in the UK and elsewhere where the elites have gotten it wrong and the polling has been wrong. And it's always been wrong in favor of the statist party. And I don't have access to the polls that Kellyanne has access to. But I think that there is something going on out there when Donald Trump can land in a place like Pensacola, Florida, and he's going to get 45,000 people to turn up at a stadium. Something is going on out there, and that should not be overlooked. I also agree with Eric that the first debate is going to tell a lot about what's going to happen in this race.
Chris, what do we make of Trump's comment that he met with very top police was the quote in Chicago, and that you could end the crime in Chicago in a week is what he was told. And yet there doesn't seem to be any evidence, at least as far as what the Chicago police are telling us, that he ever met with anybody in a ranking position.
Yeah, I don't have the quote in front of me, but I do know a year and 2 months ago when he was here in town for the City Club talk, and he was right four stories above us at the Tribune editorial board, he was talking a lot about his $450 million investment sitting a half a block away from us at the Trump Tower. And his familiarity with Chicago policing and with the requirements for the Chicago for the protection of his building and also what was going on in the city was pretty in depth. Okay. And, you know, he's represented here in town by Ed Burke, doing the tax business for that tower over there. Ed Burke, as we all know, is a former cop. Goodness only knows who he spoke with on a formal or informal basis. I will point out he had a, I think, prophetic conversation with the Tribune editorial board in that meeting, which I think is still on the website, and people can dial in and take a look, judge for themselves. But he has a very serious concern about Chicago's reputation, but more importantly, about what's actually happening on the streets, not just of Chicago, but of all the cities. And I think that gets into his attempts so far to reach out both to the African-American community and to the Hispanic community, for which he's got to be, I think, praised because he's trying, but maybe he also has to try harder.
Well, he insulted them for a year and a half and then gives a couple speeches to white audiences saying black people should listen to him. I'm not sure that's a reach out. But look, Dave, to your question, you know, we know the guy embellishes. We know he lies. We know there's never a story he didn't want to exaggerate. And I think that's another one of them.
All right. Speaking of that, I want to get your comment, your thoughts on this comment.
Hillary Clinton is a bigot who sees people of color only as votes. Not as human beings worthy of a better future. She's going to do nothing for African Americans. She's going to do nothing for the Hispanics. She's only going to take care of herself, her husband, her consultants, her donors. These are the people she cares about. She doesn't care what her policies have done to your communities.
That was Trump in Jackson, Mississippi yesterday. All right, take the statement just for what it's worth.
Yeah.
I personally, I'm tired of all the name calling on every single side, but that's never going to end. It's politics. Sure. We're 73 days out from the election. What are your thoughts?
It reminds me of the playground spat where the one kid says, why'd you steal my lunch? He says, I'm not a thief. You're a thief. You know, it's the classic jujitsu where you don't want to be called something, so you call the other person that. And yeah. You know, Trump's been called a lot of horrible names that he's earned, I think, over the course of this campaign, like a bigot, like a misogynist, like a racist. That's not name calling. Those are descriptions based on the things he has said. And I think he's now thinks, you know, he has the attitude of I'm a bully and I say it loud enough, tell the lie loud enough, it can change the subject. And look, he was successful doing that in the Republican primaries by calling people names. I think for Donald Trump to call Hillary Clinton a bigot is just kind of laughable.
Well, I think it's harsh. It's harsh. Okay. They're going for the biggest prize and things are going to get harsher. Okay. So we all have to strap in. Mm-hmm. Illinois Policy Institute's got a thing out today detailing the highest unemployment rate for African-Americans in the entire country is in the state of Illinois. And in the state of Illinois, the home state of Barack Obama, African Americans are suffering from a 15% unemployment rate. And bear in mind that 15% unemployment rate is calculated on a workforce rate that is the lowest it's been in 35 years because of the melting away of our labor participation. So 15% is a cry of the heart, okay? And I think the point that is salient relative to the Hispanic community and to the African-American community is we are here to try and compete for your support, okay? I think that's what Trump is saying. And Trump is holding, when he says, what do you have to lose? What is the great concern?
He's got people at his rallies with KKK signs. He's got people at his rallies saying white power.
I don't think that's true.
He defends David Duke.
He did not defend David Duke.
It's absolutely true. It's absolutely true.
Okay, so just to finish my point, when you are suffering from 15% unemployment after 8 years of Barack Obama, then what is there to be lost by considering someone who is appealing to you for your support?
Chris, you would disagree that he fans the flames, goes right up to that edge of racism and stoking white fear and playing one race against the other. You would deny that?
Absolutely.
Come on. You're smarter than that.
I absolutely deny it.
I wish we could talk about this the whole rest of the show. No, I do.
Chris knows better.
It's great discussions. You guys are excellent. Thank you so much for being here. I'm sorry we have to get the traffic. But Eric, give out how people can get a hold of you.
8064 is the Twitter handle. I work at AL Media.
And Chris, thank you for being here as well.
Nice to be here. Say hi to Pat Brady.
We will. How can people get a hold of you if they want to follow you? Twitter,
call
website.
Andrea Darlis.
Yeah. Chris Roebling, Eric Adelstein. You guys, thank you so much. As always, we'll obviously continue our discussion
off
the air as well. Somebody actually texted, the first presidential debate is September 26th. That's in New York. The second is at Wash U on October 9th in St. Louis. And the third presidential debate, third and final, October 19th at UNLV in Las Vegas. So thank you so much again to Rick Pearson and to Eric and Chris for being here as well. Let's get to traffic. And Ryan Burrow going to join us in a few minutes to talk about your health coverage. WGN. It's the Steve Cochran Show. Dave and Andrea Darlis in for Steve. He'll be back with us tomorrow. So the big question on everybody's mind, will your insurance premiums be going through the roof next year like they're not already? One of the biggest discussions now with Aetna leaving the marketplace. Health and Human Services Department trying to quash rumors that insurance premiums are going to be unaffordable on the entire marketplace next year. And our own Ryan Burrow has been following this story, and right. Everybody's talking. We actually, before we went on the air, we're just talking about all of our different sagas and stories with our own insurance and our deductibles and our premiums.
Yeah. And let's face it. Your insurance premiums aren't going down. It doesn't matter if you're buying them from the marketplace or if you're buying them, buying it from your work program. I mean, it's just kind of the nature of the beast right now. HHS says, look, these rates were exploding before Obamacare took effect, so these increases aren't nearly as bad as they could have been. But let's get into what Illinois is suggesting, and this is the Illinois Department of Insurance saying that it submitted its rate increases. We knew they were going to go up. We didn't know how big, and now it looks like at least some of the programs could see these insurance rates or premiums at least going up 43% to 55%. This is their recommendation. Still needs to get final approval before those rates go into effect, and you can start buying from the marketplace on November 1st.
Is it fair to blame Obamacare for everything? Because I know we've all heard these stories. I've heard it. You've heard it just covering different stories that we've been on. Well, you know, with the rising rates. Oh, it's Obamacare. Is it fair to say that?
You know, okay, so HHS yesterday trying to tamp down all of that rhetoric. Now, they didn't address a couple things. Number one, we do see a lot of insurers backing out saying, hey, we're losing money here.
Right.
You know, we're losing millions and millions of dollars. One of the reasons Aetna's backed out. Many exchanges in many states have just a handful, if not one or two insurance companies to choose from. HHS saying there are a couple factors here. First of all, they don't expect the people who buy from the insurance marketplace to see a major explosion of their rates for two reasons. Number one, they said there is competition. So, you know, companies are competing for your rates, and that's going to prevent some of the explosion. And number two, you've always got these tax breaks. So, for example, these people who are going to see their insurance premiums go up $75 a month, may not feel that fully every month in their month-to-month payments because they're getting these tax breaks that are included. In fact, they said even with a 50% increase, more than half of the people who buy from the exchange will not be paying more than $75 a month.
So we're talking at the high end, mid-50 percentage-wise?
Yeah, it could be. And that's Illinois. I mean, we've got some states, Georgia, Ohio, North Carolina, that are down to one or two companies that are competing on the exchanges. So they could see it fluctuate even more. Now, HHS saying, you know, we were told last year that prices were going to explode and we only saw them go up an average of $4. So they're obviously tamping down expectations. And you know, the other thing to factor in too, apples and oranges, I'm not defending one side or the other, is that our private insurance, we were talking, you know, all three of us do not buy from the exchange, at least not that I'm aware of. And, you know, we get it through work or various services. And, you know, those rates are going up as well, too. So it's kind of hard to compare, you know, what's going worse. Is it the private industry or is it the marketplace?
It seems high, even though you say only, and I know HHS is saying this, that it's only a 50% jump, which would be less than $75 a month. But that still, that does add up. I mean, that's almost, what, $7,000 a year?
It does. I mean, when you're talking, if you're buying from the exchange and you're paying $230, $240 and you're not getting the tax break, because some people aren't. They're just going to the exchange and saying, you know what, this is cheaper than buying it through my work. Or maybe I've got a bunch of part-time jobs and I've got to go to the exchange, but I make more money than getting the tax break, you know. So, yeah, I mean, it's expensive. You're talking $200, $300, and it depends on the program you're getting, too. And, you know, God forbid you have some kind of heart condition or cancer or something like that that's right. going to, you know, factor into the costs as well.
Or long-term hospitalization.
We talked to Doc Most about this on Monday.
Yeah.
And it's also deductibles.
Oh, the deductibles are crazy. And you know what? And he suggested, and this is probably a good idea too, Ryan, start, you know, you don't want to be morbid, but save up a little bit of money to pay off that deductible. Because I got socked with when you said your family did as well, not realizing, okay, the day is going to come when you're going to have an MRI or a CT scan or a chest X-ray, whatever it might be, and you're going to get socked with that deductible. We're all in this together.
Yeah,
I mean, we are all in this together.
That bill comes in the hundreds of dollars, and you always hope, you cross your fingers, and you hope it says, you know, underneath, this is not a bill. We've all gotten those, and you can go, whew, you know, the insurance hasn't taken care of it yet. But when it finally comes and this is a bill, it can be pretty pricey. And, you know, it's really, really hard because this is all apples to oranges, you know, as far as the pricing scheme, as far as where you are in life. And in Illinois, it depends on what county you're in.
Right.
You know, if you're in Cook County versus if you're downstate or in Lake County or McHenry County or Will County.
And mine actually says, you better believe this is a bill.
Mr. Cat, exclamation point, go Cats.
No.
Ryan, thank you so much. We appreciate it. At least trying to make a little sense of everything that's going on. And for more information, Health and Human Services.
You'll pay mine, won't you? Thank you.
Carmi, you got to let me borrow about $6,000 so I can pay off him and its premiums.
Sure, Andrea. I'll take out a loan, give it to you. Whatever the rate is, maybe I'll go to guaranteed rate. Get that done for you.
Good.
Speaking of, we'll be discussing that in the 9 o'clock hour. Thanks to Ryan Burrow, and we'll have your news next for you here, 720 WGN.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world,
some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you?
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Hollywood. You know I love you more than what I should. Yeah, Hollywood. Well, kiss me good.
8:12 in the morning, 720 WGN. Dean Richards joins us on the phone this morning. Dean, we miss you. We came in studio today. We're looking for
where's
you.
Where's Dean?
Yeah,
he's not here today.
With the Deanie withdrawals.
I love fake enthusiasm. It's my
How could you tell? No, it was great having you here yesterday.
It was fun. We had a nice time yesterday. We had some laughs and talked about some serious stuff and yeah, it was nice, and thank you to all the listeners. There was some very, very nice emails and notes yesterday that they enjoyed the show yesterday. I didn't appreciate the ones that said that they wanted Steve killed. That seemed a little extreme.
That was a little extreme.
A little over the top.
So they all, everybody enjoyed our kale and urinal cake story, urinal cake talk.
That those were two separate talks.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. The two are not related. Kale has enough of an image problem. We don't need to.
That's right.
Link it in with that. But by far, I'm even hesitant to bring it up again. The urinal cake story. By far the number one topic on the show yesterday. I blame the listeners for that.
You know, for me, it was quite informative. So I thank you both for educating me. Yeah, as always. Dean, you are on the road. You were en route to a couple of junkets, I believe, next week, right?
Yeah, I'm in Phoenix, Arizona today. And I've got a whole bunch of interviews scheduled over the next several days. I'm naturally excited to speak to each and every one of the actors that I'll be talking to over the next several. But I'm really excited, especially because I'm going to be talking with Oliver Stone and Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Oliver Stone directing the new movie about Edward Snowden, and Joseph Gordon-Levitt playing Edward Snowden. This movie already has got some Oscar buzz. Already people are talking about, you know, this is going to be a breakthrough film for Joseph Gordon-Levitt, who I think is a fantastic actor anyway. But, you know, they're taking on this very truthful, let me put it this way. They're taking on the story of Edward Snowden left in the hands of Oliver Stone. We know that stories don't always wind up as factual as they actually are.
Right, right.
So it's going to be interesting to see what... you know, love him or hate him, Oliver Stone always delivers really interesting stories. Joseph Gordon-Levitt, you know, I'm a big fan of. But we've got that. We've got some animated films that are coming up that we're going to be talking to the voices. Andy Samberg. We've got a new, it looks like a suspense thriller with Morris Chestnut and Regina Bell. So lots of movies. And then also in this whole mix, we're going to be talking with comedian Tim Allen.
Oh, cool.
Who, you know, has for, I think it's six seasons now, has this comedy called Last Man Standing.
It's a good show.
You know what? I actually have to catch up with some episodes of it. I don't watch as much TV as I should, except Channel 9, of course, which it's going to be on Channel 9. It's going to be starting in the evening on WGN TV. So, I'm going to be an interview machine for the next several days.
You know, I love that you do that, Dean. We were talking a little bit off the air yesterday about the junket, and I think I had asked you what's your favorite thing to cover, the Grammys, the Oscars, the Emmys, and your response was, well, the red carpet is a challenge. Because you're all picked.
I believe those were my exact words. I believe my exact words were, I hate it with a passion.
Something like that. Yeah, you enjoy the junkets a little bit more. Plus, it's one-on-one. You're in an air-conditioned room. You're not out on sweaty red carpet. So it gives you more of a one-on-one personal interview, a personal experience.
Everybody thinks that red carpets are, you know, so glamorous and so fun because you see the five-second snippet of talking to celebrities as they're walking into some big event. And very interestingly, I hadn't really thought of it until Dave brought it up yesterday. Dave said it's very much, you know, in the sports world of doing the locker room interviews where you're clamoring with, 20 other reporters to ask a question, to get a sound bite, to get something from somebody in that locker room setting. It's very much like that, where you have literally, you may have three or four feet from side to side, in which you, a cameraman, a sound man, you know, your whole crew has to negotiate, and hundreds of other reporters at the same time, you know, trying to ask questions on the red carpet.
Get into it, Dean? Tempers ever flare?
Yeah. Does that happen with sports guys too?
Well, once in a while.
You should see Carmen and Ennett in studio today, Dean. Yeah. As the stand between them the whole time.
Yeah. No.
Yeah, that's not even a red carpet setting.
No.
And they're on the same team.
I'm a lover, not a fighter, Dean. You know this.
No, we're okay. But once in a while, you'll see in very tight quarters, things get a little heated. Somebody gets in somebody's shot or something.
Yeah, I've had that happen. I've had, I know you'll find it hard to believe that I've had confrontations.
No.
Not you.
A couple of times where you're doing an interview with somebody and,
you know, somebody just sticks their microphone into your interview, it's, you know, and they sort of hijack the interview. It's just, it's so unprofessional. It's just not ever done, except by some people who don't know the protocol and don't know, you know, apparently didn't get any home training on basic courtesy from their parents.
Who's been your best junket interview? Who do you always look forward to seeing, knowing, okay, I know we joke about the Tommy Lee Joneses and the Meg Ryans and their, you know, the struggles that they have doing these junkets, but who are the actors or actresses that you putting it nicely again?
That was
am I sugarcoating all of your
You are super polite. You need to work in the State Department.
Want to make a donation to my foundation?
Andrea needs a job as a diplomat. Send her to Syria right away to try to negotiate a peace settlement.
Send me to the trenches.
Very politely put about those dopes.
But aside from Halle Berry, who I know is in love with you, has a huge secret crush on you. Not so secret. But who do you look forward to? I mean, is there anyone in this run where you think, oh, good, I can't wait to see this actor?
There's always, you know what? 99% of them are really nice and very, very pleasant and, you know, fun to be with and so forth. But to look forward to interviews, number one on that list is Tom Hanks.
Yeah.
He could not be nicer. He could not be more friendly. He could not be, more affable. He's got a new movie called Sully that's coming out about the pilot that landed the plane in the Hudson River, the movie directed by Clint Eastwood.
Yeah, I can't wait to see
that. Yeah, so hopefully Tom's going to be doing some interviews for that because I always look forward to talking to him. He's hilarious. He's funny. When he came to WGN a couple of years ago, and we staged this sort of "This Is Your Life" Tom Hanks walk down the long hallway from the parking lot to the studio, where we dressed up people on our crew as characters that he's played in the movie. So as he's walking down the hallway, here's, you know, Woody from Toy Story is sweeping the hall. We have an astronaut from Apollo 11.
Forrest Gump.
Somebody from Castaway. We had somebody as Forrest Gump. We had one of our poor interns. We dressed up as Tom Hanks from Bosom Buddies. thank goodness we never got a lawsuit or anything because of that. But Tom Hanks, he was like dying laughing. It completely took him by surprise. And instantly, you know, played along with the whole thing. And other stars, you know, might have reacted differently, might not have played along, might not have, you know, been part of the game. So he's probably top of the list. I always talk about, how wonderful Meryl Streep is when I've interviewed her. She's the only star. And now remember, she's probably the biggest movie star in the world.
Yeah,
probably.
Easily.
She's definitely the most successful in terms of Oscars and so forth. But if anybody doesn't need to stand up and greet you to shake your hand when you walk in the room, it's the biggest movie star in the world.
How cool is that?
But Meryl Streep, as I said before, apparently had some parents that taught her manners and courtesy. That's really what it boils down to. It's, you know, whether you've got good courtesy or whether you don't have good courtesy. Meryl Streep, always pleasant, always fun. I could go down the list of people who are so much fun, make you laugh so much. I'm looking forward to this weekend. I've interviewed Oliver Stone many times, always very, very, you know, friendly and welcoming and professional. Joseph Gordon-Levitt, the same thing.
Well, you got some big A-listers coming up, Dean. We look forward to hearing all the interviews. It's going to be great.
We sure do. Yeah.
Well, be safe, Dean. We miss you. And again, we'll look forward to your A-list interviews.
We'll have that. And then tomorrow morning, I'm going to be I'll be back with you guys. We'll be reviewing this new movie about Barack and Michelle Obama's very first date on the South Side of Chicago. It's a really interesting, kind of different and lovely film called South Side with You. Andrea and Dave, not a review.
No,
because that will be tomorrow.
That'll be tomorrow on the program right here at this time.
Tomorrow morning.
So just wait 24 hours. That's all you have to do.
over most of this same station.
Okay. Stay cool today.
Thanks,
Dean. 102 in Phoenix today.
There you go.
That's right. I've been seeing that on the news all day today. That's not good for a big, sweaty Greek guy.
Wear sunscreen.
Let me get that visual. Okay, good. Thanks, Dean.
Try to get it out of your mind. Have a great day, guys.
Ooh, that's embedded in my brain. We'll talk to Dean tomorrow.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
This hour, sponsored by Wintrust Community Banks, the Steve Cochran Show. Dave Ennett, Andrea Darlis, DNA in for Steve this morning. He'll be back tomorrow.
So big news, as long as we're still talking some entertainment. Mary, you're going to love this. They haven't announced the full Dancing with the Stars cast yet, but you are not going to believe. Mark, I shouldn't leave you out of this. This will be of interest to you as well.
I'm right here, Andrea.
Guess who might be appearing on Dancing with the Stars? Did you guys hear this?
Michael Jordan.
Are you going with a football player?
It's an athlete.
It's always a football player. It's always at least one.
It's an athlete, and we're lucky enough to have a little... Do we have him here in studio, Dave? Can we bring him in?
I think we can, yes.
Can we bring him in?
Oh, you're kidding.
All right, here's your clue. Mystery guest who might be appearing on Dancing with the Stars this fall. Who are you?
Gia, boy. Oh, Gia.
Oh, yeah, and he's with... He's with us. He's here with us. Are you psyched? We're talking about the one, the only, Ryan Lochte.
Come on.
Bras.
Yeah.
Hey.
Is this true?
What's up, dude?
Is it true? Can you confirm these rumors, Ryan?
Gonna be cutting the rug, Mare Bear.
What color hair are you gonna have?
Oh, totes. Totally gonna do the bleach blonde. Totes.
Nice.
Totes my goats.
Hey, is it
glitter?
DTWS or DWTS?
I don't worry about the deets, brah.
Yeah, what shorter is
I'm
it?
I'm just
in, Ryan?
Cutting rugs, bruh.
Are you psyched? Is there any partner that you really want to be with, Ryan?
As long as they're hot, man. Because I'm pretty hot, so.
Ryan, do you regret the vandalism? Can you speak about that?
You know, not really. I miss the money, though, Speedo and stuff.
Yeah, Speedo. You know the good news, though, Ryan?
With Ralph Lauren, you know, we still talk.
Talk to Ralph Lauren. Negotiations, I guess, with your agents went so smoothly, Ryan, that they say you're a virtual shoo-in for the next season. How's that make you feel?
Just pretty great. It's been a really good couple weeks, though. This is just another, another chapter of my existence.
Your existence?
You're a good dancer, Ryan?
Yeah.
What dance are you looking most forward to, Ryan?
All of them. Yeah. Do them all.
The tap dance?
Tapping, the tango.
The samba?
Macarena. We just do it all.
The cha-cha?
Cha-cha?
The cha-cha?
Oh, cha-cha.
Cha-cha.
Oh, okay.
How about the Paso Doble?
Yeah, boy.
Yeah.
The announcement of the cast scheduled to take place on Good Morning America on Tuesday. And, Ryan, we may or may not see you there. You're back in the States. You might be on that show Tuesday.
Maybe. See what happens.
What else are you doing these days, anyway?
Just chilling.
Oh, you got a lot of time to chill.
L-I-V-I-N, Mare Bear.
Yeah.
You got time to chill. So, all right, Ryan Lochte, that is serious. We joke around with that bit, if you will.
But all these sponsors are dropping him. He's losing. He loses all of his endorsements, mm-hmm. But there's Dancing with the Stars to scoop him up.
There you go.
That's bad.
It's gone from
true.
B-list to C-list to D-list. No offense, Ryan. Not
Mary, good. I mean, you're, Mary, the biggest fan of that show.
And Andrea, yeah.
Yeah, but you really are.
I'm offended. I'm offended if he shows up.
Okay. Are you really?
Yes. He's too new. You know?
Yeah, there's no time.
We haven't
time
had a chance to
by.
Process yeah, quite right. yet. But yep. No, I can see him maybe in a year. They've never had a swimmer on the show. No, they did have that cross-country woman.
Oh, Diana.
Diana, whatever her name was. Nygaard?
Nygaard, yeah.
She was not good.
So what if they bring Hope Solo back and then put them together?
Poor Mary. You're going to make Mary's head explode.
My.
She's looking forward to the announcement next week, and now you're just tainting it all.
Could you imagine Hope Solo? Wait, I think Hope Solo was already in it.
No, she was.
She was.
I said if they'll bring her back.
She might be back. She's got nothing to do either now, Mary.
They don't come back twice.
They're all... Unless it's the superstar. All right, we'll be back. Big story coming up with Ryan Burrow, not Ryan Lochte, after this. 720 WGN.
Aw, yeah.
Ryan Dempster.
Steve!
There's a 1-1 to Freeman.
Oh, he caught it! Right into the palm of Dempster's glove.
Ooh, that is a little smile there from Dempster.
What would Harry say right now about this win?
Well, I gotta tell you, there's a lot of champagne in here. I haven't seen this much champagne since my wedding. We had a party just like this. It was phenomenal. Go, go!
That was outstanding.
841, the Steve Cochran Show. Dave Ennett, Andrea Darlis, Mark Harmon alongside here handling sports this morning. So, it's August 25th. The Chicago Cubs, you know where your Chicago Cubs are? They are 81-45. What that means is they have clinched a 500 record on August 25th. If they were to lose all of their remaining games, they would still finish at 500 for the season. But as we all know, that's not going to happen. And it's just kind of surreal almost what's happening. Just relax. I'm not saying anything here that hasn't been said or thought by every Cubs fan.
Say it,
Ryan
Dave.
Dempster checks in every Thursday morning with us. All right, so no reason people ought to be nervous about this, right, Ryan?
I think it's comical sometimes, to be honest with you, when people say they're nervous. Like, it's the last thing you want to be with this team is nervous.
Right?
Yeah, it really is. I mean, what are you nervous about? That what, they're going to do something that's been done, you know, for the last 100 years? Like, I just think, like, it's just a good time to just really put all your chips in and get on board, 100% behind it, because it means something. I said it before on air here. It means something when you have everybody behind you, especially down the stretch and getting into the playoffs. To have everybody behind your back and saying this is going to happen, nothing bad is going to happen, good things are going to happen, these guys believe good things are going to happen, and kind of have that approach, I think it'll pay huge dividends.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. I mean, I think I started giving the magic number a week or so ago, and people were saying, "Oh, it's too early. You can't be talking like that yet." Of course, you have a 13.5 game lead on August 25th, and there's no signs. I mean, they're playing as well over the last, let's see, they're 19 out of 23 now. They've had a month of August in which they've lost four games with, what, a week to go, not even a week to go in the month, this month, which a lot of times can tell the story for a team because you hit the dog days. But we haven't seen any evidence of that. Just the contrary. They've played some of their best baseball recently.
Yeah, they have, and I think it's their approach. If you listen to what they say, they mean it. And I'm down there in the locker room, and I talk with these guys, and it's just, what can we do today? They're not talking about magic numbers. They're not talking about win streaks they've been on or what's in the future, who they're playing down the road. It's about winning today's game, and that's the approach they come with, and I think that's why they're having such great success. You know, you hear – pitchers talk about it all the time. Oh, what did I do? I took it one pitch at a time, and that's how I stayed in the zone. And I think this team has taken it one game at a time, taking that approach. And I think that's why they're in the zone the way they are, and executing, you know, and outplaying. They're getting leads. They're not giving them up, and they're just outplaying people. And they want it so bad. They want it for multiple different reasons, and I think you're seeing the performance on the field because of that.
We've talked a lot about the starting pitchers, and we finally saw that. The unthinkable happened last week, and a starting pitcher for the Cubs lost a game, which hadn't happened since late July was the last time it had happened. And you look at the way they pitched this series in San Diego, from John Lester with another quality start. Well, it's 20 quality starts now on the year. And then Jake Arrieta with 8 innings, 2-hit ball. And then Kyle Hendricks yesterday. It's almost like every day the guy who goes out there is trying to top what the guy did the night before.
Oh, for sure. I guarantee you those guys got a fancy steak dinner on something, whether it's for ERA or strikeouts or you name it, wins, because there's an inner competitiveness, this ability to drive each other it's coming through in a big way, and to learn from each other. When you're sitting there in the dugout and you watch a guy carve up some hitters for eight innings, and you're like, oh, okay, you pitch him like that, and as long as you go out there and execute, you can get the same results. And, you know, you're seeing these guys have a great game plan between Mike Borzello and Chris Bosio, the game plan they put together for these guys, and then it's all about going out there and executing, and they're putting themselves in the best situation to do that. They get enough rest because you have a big enough lead that you can give a break here and there, maybe an inning or two, where you're always fresh when you go out there. That's huge. You don't see a lot of deep pitch counts. We'll save those for later in the season.
Ryan, who are you starting behind the plate game one of the playoffs, assuming that it's not John Lester, because obviously David Ross is going to catch him, and who do you have in your outfield?
Oh, man, I don't know. Behind the plate, it's hard to say. You know, I'm a big believer in experience behind the plate, especially in the playoffs. You know, it's the one thing about Contreras, the experience that he's gaining right now is huge. I think when the whole move happened to bring him up, people are wondering why we have two catchers, three at the time, and why this kid. But I think it's just for exact reason that's happening, is gaining all this experience of catching these guys. You know, after the first time throwing in with Arrieta throwing, everybody's, you know, saying, oh, new catcher, and look how fast that turned around, just the ability to get that experience of catching them. So, you know, I do like that experience, having Rossi, a guy back there that's done that and done so well back there. And as far as the outfield, I mean, you can put anybody out there. Joe's done such an incredible job of rotating guys, whether it's right or left field, but you'll see, you know, most likely you'll see Hayward and right and Fowler and center, and who knows, you know, Soler's swinging the bat great, and Zobrist can play out. There's so many different options, so that's a great thing, but we still got a little ways to go. We got to get there before we start actually setting out a lineup before we can start talking about it.
Hey, Demp, Rizzo and Bryant both in serious contention to be the MVP of the league this year. Is there any razzing that goes on in the locker room? I know that wasn't there when you were playing, of course, but any razzing between those two? Because I know their lockers are next to each other.
Yeah, you know what? I don't think so much between each other wouldn't necessarily be the case. But I can guarantee you that there's times where, you know, maybe Riz hits a homer or you know, drives in a bunch of runs. He comes in the dugout and guys are like, he's going to catch you. He's going to catch you. You know, they go back and forth. And it's the job of everybody else to push those guys, because they're out there just trying to, you know, yeah, sure. Are you trying to win MVP? Absolutely. You start the season saying, I want to win MVP. Anybody who says, oh, I wasn't thinking about it, they're lying. I mean, I think deep down inside, that's a goal for anybody. But the process is what gets you there, and those guys are just going about the process, and all the other guys are the ones that are having fun with it and want to see them do it. They want to see them be 1-2. What a great thing that would be.
All right, this weekend, Chavez Ravine, you've got the Cubs and the Dodgers. Jason Hamill's going to pitch Saturday, Mike Montgomery tomorrow, and John Lester on Sunday. And, you know, again, I mean, this is another one of those series that people are looking at and saying, okay, this could be a preview of a series we'll see in the postseason.
Yeah, well, for sure. And the way the Dodgers are playing, they're playing good baseball right now. Rich Hill throws great for them last night. And, you know, it's a fun – sweeping that series down in San Diego was huge, because – now, you sit there and go 1-2 in L.A. and you have a winning West Coast road trip. And that's hard to do. When you go on the West Coast and play three different cities, it's a hard thing to go out and walk away with that road trip and on a winning cause. And, you know, it's going to be a fun series. I know the guys want to go out there, you know, play really well and do the best they can to come away with, you know, more than that, with more than just one game. So you can just take it by that one game on Friday, get to say goodbye to Vin Scully and go out there and compete against a team that's playing really good baseball as well. It lets you know where you stand. Sometimes when you're playing against teams that are playing really good ball at the top of their division, it gives you an idea of where you stack up against them, you know, what kind of, you know, problems you might run into down the road against them and what adjustments you might have to face if you do face them because of the way they attacked you.
Great stuff. It should be a great weekend. Ryan, thanks. We'll check in with you again next week.
Demp Ross behind the plate, Contreras and left, Zobrist and right, Baez at second, Bryan at third. Come on, right there. You can feel me, right?
I say you go throw your application in for a manager somewhere. You're doing a great job so far.
Don't be feeling calm.
Yeah.
See you, Dennis.
Well, see
you. Guys. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, you too.
You with me on that, Dave?
Ryan Dempster. I got to analyze it a little bit. Well. You got to run. You talked a little quick there. I can't quite keep up.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own 720
WGN.
Yeah, Chicago. Thanks, Steve Cochran Show. Dave Ennett, Andrea Darlis, Mark Carmen doing some sports with us today. Can I ask you guys a question?
Please.
I know we got into this off the air. Can I ask this on the air? I mean, I'm as big of a Cub fan as you guys are. I'm so thrilled that they're doing so well. Demps gives us the insight every week. Carrie Wood on with Rokan and Anna in the afternoon,
today,
giving them
I
great
believe.
Insight. Yeah, Carrie's on with them today. Why are we playing Jason Hayward? I'm sorry. I'm sure he's a wonderful person, but you're this far in the season? And he's hitting, what, 235?
226, Dave? What is it?
Yeah, somewhere around there.
Why is he playing when you have Baez on the bench or you can use Soler?
Well, they're finding places to play Baez.
I know. But don't you think now they should start playing them more regularly because we are going to be in the playoffs?
Well, they're hoping that Jason Hayward's going to come around, right, Dave? I mean, they're
Oh, yeah, it's only August 25th. Why wouldn't he?
Well, but they also have a huge lead, so you have some room to continue to throw him out there.
Yeah, they gave him 4 days off last week, came back, hit a home run his first game back.
It's a weak homer, though.
Okay. It wasn't a majestic moonshot.
I mean, every
all
hit,
right, it got over the
like
wall.
Every hit,
Schwarber blast.
Did you see his hit yesterday? Like barely eluded the second baseman who was playing deep out there. His home run barely goes over the wall. Come playoff time, he can't be in the lineup, Dave.
I agree.
Come on. You've got so many options.
But Dave said he's a good fielder. I said I could play right field.
He's an excellent fielder.
Right? Oh, I know.
Oh, you can play right field.
Right? I did play right field.
Coming.
Hey, I play bench and right field. So
Mike, can we
right up there.
Borrow Wrigley Field for a little outfield tryout?
Oh, no,
Andre?
I couldn't be play sure. right field right now. I meant back in my prime. Okay. Back in the
That's
heyday
not
of the
what you
80s.
Said.
I played
That's
bench
what,
and right field.
Back
no,
in
I
your,
just don't think I agree with Carmi though. I don't think he could I don't think he deserves a spot in that lineup.
I think right now you play this thing out. He's apparently working really hard, trying to get straightened out. The guy has hit in the past, and see what happens. You have a 13.5 game lead, and it's August 25th.
Why are the most expensive Cubs not the best players?
You mean
on the
like
team?
John Lester? He's not. He's only won 14
he's,
games.
No,
20
he's
quality
okay.
Starts.
He's fine. But Miguel Montero, why is he making $11 million?
Well, and Hayward's at what, 22?
Yeah, Hayward. All right, we're not going to go down the list because
these things. I want Dave's feedback on my lineup, Andre, if I may. Here,
let's let him do his lineup. Okay.
All right. I want experience behind the plate, so I'm going with David Ross, who's had a better season than Miguel Montero. So I'm going to take Rossi behind the plate.
I'm okay
about
with
Contreras.
That.
Yeah, I like Contreras too.
Yeah.
But I like the experience thing.
All right.
You're talking a playoffs
yeah,
scenario.
We're talking playoffs.
All right. Let's go with your lineup.
Okay. And then I've got in left field. I want Wilson Contreras' bat in the lineup, and he's played fine out in left. So I'm going to put him in left. And then who do you want? Jorge Soler over there?
Keep going.
Okay.
Keep going.
All right, then in center, obviously, is Fowler. We don't need to do every position. But in right field, I'm putting Ben Zobrist, who's played fine out there when he's gotten a chance. So then in my infield, I've got Rizzo, and I go around to, I'm putting Baez at second, who's been magnificent. Then I got, of course, Russell, and then I got Brian at third. And you have no Jason Hayward. And by the way, if you don't, I'm willing to put Bryant in the outfield, Baez at third, and then you can have Zobrist at second, add in a Soler, whatever you want to do. Just, no, you can't. Hayward.
I agree. You get too much power with Baez and Soler.
I you say you see where you are on October.
But if it was tomorrow, if it was tomorrow. And
I'd start Hayward in the game one of the playoffs.
Oh, you're killing us.
So loyal. That's why you got
to That's not a question of loyalty.
What would
Mark,
you want?
I mean,
really?
Yeah. I mean, I think you want a guy, he's
like
been
the
through
defense.
It. There's experience. There's defense there.
How about this? How about a happy medium? How about he starts game one of the playoffs, and if he sucks, he doesn't play game two. If he goes 0 for whatever or 1 for 5, 1 for 4, he's out.
I mean, they're all going to play. See, that's the thing. Have you watched this team at all?
Yeah,
they all play.
Don't
yeah, but you
play.
Just relax. Don't worry about game one.
He's got to make a decision on that at some point.
No, he
not till October the 7th. I get it.
Okay. The Beat Weekends, Mark.
Yeah, Carmen. Really. I mean, this is not.
No, this
the
is
beat.
Good. No, I brought this up because I wanted to hear his lineup, and I think it's
because you agreed with him.
I did agree with him.
Okay, thank you. So thank you, if you didn't agree, you wouldn't have brought it up.
All right, we're going to talk more baseball right after 9 o'clock. Lissa Dress Chrisman is going to be in studio to talk about another hot baseball topic today: U.S. Cellular changing its name. So, what are we going to call it from now
it's
on?
It's not U.S. Cellular changing Sorry. Its name. It's U.S. Cellular field changing its
Sorry.
Name.
Sorry, yes. Let's be clear on that and what y'all think of that. That's right after the news, and that's next on WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
You gotta be bleeping me.
Dadgummit.
Nice, Mikey J. That music, of course, for the White Sox. We promised we'd talk some White Sox. Actually, more U.S. Cellular Field, what to call the park now. Lissa Dress Chrisman has been covering this story in studio with us today, talking about U.S. Cellular changing its name. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
It's always nice to see you.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
All right. So what's the big controversy?
What isn't the big controversy? Well, let's start. Guaranteed Rate Field. That's what the ballpark will be known as of November 1st. So
that's true.
Now the mission, everybody's mission is, what are we really going to call it?
Well, let's go back to White Sox fans never even liked it when it was named U.S. Cellular Field.
Right.
So White Sox fans aren't going to be happy with this either. They clearly aren't. They took to social media like crazy last night, every name in the book, literally. But you got to think about it. White Sox fans are always going to call it Sox Park. You know, Comiskey, not Kaminsky, Comiskey. And that's the family. That's the family that the Sox fans know, and they're never going to let that go. And we were talking a little bit before we came on the air. At Midway, the parking level is still Comiskey Park.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Lissa, what's the advantage for Guaranteed Rate, a mortgage company, signing this deal with the White Sox, 13-year deal?
Well, if you look at it, it was a company started by a gentleman from Oak Brook. And if you read up on the company, he wants a national footprint. And what this does is it's not just about the people driving down the Dan Ryan or going to the ballpark or listening about it on the radio. It's about the national and international footprint that Guaranteed Rate now gets, because Major League Baseball announcers will always say Guaranteed Rate. And internationally, you know, Carmen, the footprint that baseball has in the Dominican and in all the other countries. So it's literally an international footprint. It's money well spent for Guaranteed Rate, but what is that going to do to their bottom line? Don't know, but the footprint, it's a good move by them.
And this is a huge company. I mean, the billions of dollar company we're talking about, Guaranteed Rate. My understanding is that there was a very strong bond built between Guaranteed Rate and the White Sox. There's a bunch of people that wanted in there, and for whatever reason, Jerry and Guaranteed Rate and their people really connected. So this, there's something going on between the two that I think that both sides feel real comfortable with each other.
If you look at the makeup of the first deal, U.S. Cellular Field, U.S. Cellular, the company, was never really known as a Chicago company or an Illinois company. And look, Jerry Reinsdorf is a smart man. Brooks is a smart man. They know that the connection of Chicagoans is strong, especially for White Sox fans. So to bring in a true Chicagoan as the CEO and founder of a company, and it's a true Chicago company, that was probably paramount for everything else.
They were able to get money from the U.S. Cellular deal to put back into the ballpark and make improvements. And it sounds like that's also going to be the case here. There will be money to make improvements, although I think they've done a lot of good things to the ballpark, but they can even still come up with some money and do some more things. So there's that benefit also, right?
Also, you have to think about it this way. U.S. Cellular Field, soon to be Guaranteed Rate Field, is now becoming a year-round venue. ISFA, the Illinois Sports Facility Authority, really is pushing to get concerts. They've got another game coming in. I know firsthand that that's what they're trying to do. So now Guaranteed Rate has gone from this just baseball audience to a concert audience, to a collegiate audience. And it's more of a year-round venue now, like the United Center is. Like, you know, not so much Wrigley Field, but they don't need the publicity.
Yeah. Although Wrigley Field at some point, well, look at all the concerts at Wrigley Field.
Yeah.
True. And at Wrigley Field is still Wrigley the Chewing Gum.
Very true. Very true. All right. So what are they going to call it? The Rate? I mean, is that what are the rumblings that you're hearing?
There's some rumblings we can't talk about on radio. Okay. If you read Paul Sullivan, you'll get those from his column. That was a really fun column. But who knows? Everyone's going to call it something different. But you got to go back to the broadcasters. And everyone who is talking about the game will use the full name. And that's what matters to Guaranteed Rate.
Very cool.
I'm going with the Rate.
I'm going with that, too.
I think it's
easiest.
Just solid. You feel good. You're getting a great rate at the rate. You're yeah. getting a better rate at the rate than
but
you...
But, Carmen, what do you think about the downward red arrow?
Well, I think you have to have a sense of humor in life, and I thought Brooks did a good job with the ERA, and we got a downward... Hey, listen, let's call it as it is.
And let's also be honest with you. If the Sox were doing just a little bit better, this wouldn't have been as negative of a story that it was.
Oh, well, yeah. Do you think if it were a company that was better known, and again, part of the reason they did the deal is because they aren't as well known, but if it was a company that... a household name, if it
United...
was, yeah, United, AT&T, yeah. there's already one, but something like that, people would have kind of yawned and said, okay, it's another naming rights deal. We're used to that. That's this day and age in sports. But because it's a company people aren't familiar with, that the reaction has been more negative.
I don't know if it's more negative. It's just a matter of, look at what this company is. It's a mortgage company. And everyone's always constantly looking to refinance and looking and trying to get a leg up on the competition. And this is what they thought would be a leg up on the competition. You remember companies that redid naming rights, a lot of them went bankrupt. Enron.
Sure. Yep.
Enron
sure.
Field.
And, yep.
Mm-hmm. So this, and remember when United bought the naming rights for the United Center, there was a lot of turmoil or thought, mm-hmm. is United going to go bankrupt? Because this is such a big nugget to swallow as far as check writing.
I mean, think about how much publicity they've already gotten. I mean, a guaranteed rate, I don't know what the dollar value is on what's been said on these airwaves and everywhere else, but I mean, it's a huge, huge boon right now. I mean, if you didn't know about guaranteed rate, you probably do now.
Exactly. And that's what, especially in this day and age with social media, you don't just have us traditional former and current journalists talking about it on the traditional media. You have social media, and it took off last night on Twitter.
When does this go into effect, and when do they call in the painters and
November 1st,
the caulkers,
right?
To start
November 1st,
taking it
but
off.
If, interestingly, they had the logos up a lot during the game yesterday.
Did they?
And so that has, you have to wonder if that was contractually okay with U.S. Cellular Fields and U.S. Cellular, the company, mm-hmm. to now broadcast that it's going to be called guaranteed rate. That was an interesting little twist last night. And they also had the CEO throw out the first pitch. So, you know, they got their money for their media.
You mentioned Twitter, and I thought it was interesting that both the Bears and the Cubs
yes,
got
good.
Into it as well, with the Bears tweeting out breaking,
still Soldier Field,
right? And the Cubs yeah. guaranteed
failed, right.
With the videos. So, I mean, it's all in good fun, I suppose.
Well, and that shows you that the teams actually have heartbeats and people behind it and actually wanting to engage rather than just being square and boring. And I thought that was ingenious of both clubs to do that, just to have fun with it. And, you know, hey, you can't ignore the White Sox. You can't ignore any team that's in Chicago. So acknowledge them, pay homage to them, but then have fun with it.
Exactly. Let's have some fun here. Let's get some good baseball fun / hate. I love a good...
Look at him. The wheels are turning. He's going
Southside
with the
Southside needs some fun right now. They need some good
they
baseball.
They need some loving.
They need some love.
You know, three letters, guaranteed rate field, GRF. And if you add an I and an E, you have another one.
Oh,
I think Sox fans have that, too.
There you go, dude.
You
there you go.
It.
Nice
there.
Job.
Hey, Lissa, thank you so much. Great work by you, and keep us posted.
Thank you, Andre.
Thanks,
developments.
Lissa
Dress, Chris Min, following the story about U.S. Cellular Field changing its name. That goes into effect in November. All right, speaking of mortgages, we'll talk with Elise Glink in just a few minutes. We have good news and not so good news on the housing front with Elise Glink. That's coming up next, WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
Woo!
Woo!
Ow!
Love that money!
All right, we promise you great news and some not so good news on the housing front. Anytime we have money questions, we go to our friend and colleague, Elise Glink. Morning, Elise.
Good morning.
Well, how was that for a tease? Great news and not so good news on the housing front. So,
you know, it's funny. There's you look at housing and you think, wow, it's great news. Like, new construction zoomed ahead. And then you're like, yeah, but on the other hand, housing has gotten so unaffordable for so many people that you have a few new houses being built and not that many more people being able to afford to buy them. So good news and not such good news.
All right, so why? So existing home sales have dropped, the prices are rising. How come?
Well, it's a really interesting time. You've got, just on sort of for numbers this week, which came out in advance of the Fed meeting this week in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, and we'll talk about that in a minute, you've got mortgage interest rates hovering at, you know, basically historic lows. It's like 3.2% now to buy to get a 30-year fixed rate loan, and it's about 2.5% if you want to get a 15-year loan. So we're talking about rates being rock bottom. And new construction finally had some liftoff where they sold an extra 12.5%. The number of homes sold jumped. So you're looking at an average sort of annual sales rate of about 654,000, which sounds amazing, and it's certainly the best it's been since 2007. It's still about a third below where it should be. We should be well over a million new units being sold, and we're not. So that's the good news, bad news on that side. If you look on the existing home sales, so old homes that have been owned before, we're seeing the number of existing homes that are sold drop by about 3%, and we're seeing that the prices are rising. And so what we're seeing is not enough homes are for sale. People are kind of getting bored with what's out there, waiting on the sidelines. And the homes that are for sale, that have been for sale for like a year or two, they're just not selling because they're in this kind of weird sweet spot of, in Chicago, about $1.2 million to about $1.6 million, $1.7 million. And that has to do with, even though mortgage interest rates are super low, people don't earn enough.
So are people holding on to existing homes, waiting for more inventory so they can find something else and then they'll put their home on the market?
Well, I think that is the big question that nobody in the real estate industry has been able to effectively answer. Why aren't sellers selling? And I think, having talked to a lot of different sellers and a lot of different people in real estate, I think there's a whole bunch of reasons for it. Number one, I think that we've got millennials moving home in rates that we've never seen before, and maybe not for three generations. And so you've got multi-generational housing on the rise. So homeowners like parents like me, whose kids get out of college and don't have a place to go and don't earn enough to live on their own, they're moving home, so they still need all those bedrooms. So they can't really downsize. I think another reason that you're not seeing the selling is that they don't have a place to go, right? They're not finding anything they want to move into, or they're thinking that they're going to rent, but they don't want to do that just yet. So that's the second reason why I think they're not selling. And the third reason is that I think that people are still working at their same jobs as long as they absolutely can to make up for the fact that a lot of baby boomers had to liquidate 401ks to stay afloat in 2007 to 2012. And they're hoping that the home prices are going to come back if they bought in 05, 06, 07, and 08, that it's going to come back and they're going to have some equity there so that they can, you know, someday maybe retire or work part-time. So I think that a lot of that is contributing on the sell side. On the buying side, Redfin just published a survey today that is showing that affordability is a top concern for all home buyers, but particularly among millennials, and that nearly half of first-time buyers are driven to the housing market because rents are so high. So you are seeing some push because it's really cheaper to buy than rent if you can afford it. So it's sort of an interesting market right now.
Very interesting. And that makes sense, too. So the high and higher end rentals, there's really not so much to rent. So the prices are rising. But wanted to ask you about 5,000 new units coming online next year.
Yeah, I'll tell you, this is going to be pretty interesting what happens. Right now, lots of people want to live in the city, and a lot of millennials are living there because the higher paying jobs, like tech jobs, are all, you know, kind of coalescing in big cities around the country. And Chicago, because of its infrastructure and because there's lots of room to build new buildings, like we just saw Google and Sterling, they're putting up yet another building in addition to the McDonald's building that's going up where Harpo is. And by the way, that is getting torn down, or has been torn down now. But you're now going to see 5,000 new units, rental units, come online next year. And there is some concern about what the absorption rate is going to be. Will there be enough people wanting to pay high rents in order to get those units eventually rented out? I think the answer is yes, but it would be great to have some rental units that are actually able to be bought. And there's another trend that's going on, and Crane's touched on this, and I'm seeing it personally, which is that there are some investors out there, real estate investors, who are buying up condo buildings, right? So they have to get everybody to vote to sell, and they're converting those into rental units. So there is lots of interesting stuff going on that I, in 20 years plus of covering this stuff, really haven't seen it all coalesce this way.
And there was a time when it was much harder to find rental units downtown. Everything was condo.
Sure.
I bought a condo, and that was back in the 80s. Mm-hmm. But now, Elise, I'm an empty nester, baby boomer, and I have a natural inclination, it seems like, not to want to rent. That I want to downsize, but I want to buy something. But I also want to walk away with some money from the sale of my house. I don't want to just break even on the deal. And it seems like that's a tougher proposition now.
Well, in Chicago, we haven't seen, there are some areas that have seen a complete reversal, and you've got home prices that are above where they were in 2005, 6, and 7. But there are a whole lot of areas in the city where that is not the case, and Chicago still has one of the greatest percentages of underwater home buyers, meaning that the mortgage is higher than the value of the home, anywhere in the country other than maybe Phoenix and Las Vegas, which still have some pretty serious hangovers. So if you were unlucky enough to buy in 5, 4, 5, 6, or 7, you may have bought at the high, and so you're still either at underwater or what we call functionally underwater, which is after the cost of sale, you break even or you're slightly underwater. And so people are kind of waiting for that. In our metro area particularly, unlike, say, in San Francisco, where we're honestly, it feels like a bubble all over again.
Wow. All right. So the Fed's thinking about raising interest rates. You alluded to that just a few minutes ago. And no one in real estate really wants that.
Yeah, nobody wants that, even though they're at historic lows now. And a quarter point wouldn't really change much. But psychologically, it would. I don't think the Fed's going to be able to do it. Remember at the beginning of the year, I came on the show and I was like, OK, Fed's saying they're going to raise rates four times this year. Well, now we're down to if they could just do it once, they'd be happy. But I'm not sure they're going to even get there. There's so much uncertainty worldwide. So much stuff going on with negative interest rates, you know, abroad, and now it's starting to creep in here. And then you've got everybody is really freaked out about the election. So, yeah, I don't think the Fed's going to raise this year. Maybe they do once. Maybe if you look at the bond market, I would say no.
It's a crazy market. Elise, thank you so much. As always, when it comes to Money Matters, you are the best.
Oh, you're welcome anytime.
Thank you so much. That's the great Elise Glink. You can read all about Elise Glink at thinkglink.com, all one word. We'll have the big story for you next on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
WGN Radio is the sound of Chicago.
720 WGN.
9:41 in the morning. It is indeed the Steve Cochran Show. Steve off today. He is back tomorrow. Dave and I holding the fourth down with Mark Harmon here as well. So we're excited to have in studio a friend, colleague, award-winning Chicago journalist heard on the old WMAQ, WVBM, and here on WGN Radio, former director of the Illinois Radio Network. And now I can add, you can add author to your repertoire. Janet Sutherland is here.
Hey, how's it going?
It's
I can't
great.
Believe that they are allowing you to fill in for
Why?
Cochran.
All right, now
because
listen, let me just
preface this.
It is
unreal.
Janet and I worked together at WJOL Radio in Joliet in the, I don't want to date us, but how about if I say we started when we were in our teens, but we worked together in the mid-90s.
Okay, yeah, that's a good try.
We're so proud of you, though. I mean, you just wrote this wonderful, wonderful children's book called Andrew J., The Corgi Who Rescued Me, and it's getting unbelievably awesome reviews from Amazon. You got to be so proud.
I'm excited. I'm, you know, I wrote it because I've always wanted to write a children's book. Mm-hmm. And that is a funny thing. Honestly, when I was, my dad found this stupidly looking cardboard book. It was about 3x3, you know, when you're in like grade school and you like put together this like notebook.
Yeah.
I'm going to write a little book when you're in third grade. Well, I wrote some dumb book in third grade and I don't remember what it was called, but I decided I was going to be a children's book author.
Uh-huh.
And my dad reminded me that, oh, you wrote this book. And I said, yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
So
you were an author when you
so
were
I was
child.
An author when I was in third grade.
A prodigy.
Exactly.
Tell us who Andrew J. is.
Andrew J. It was my corgi back in, 2004-05 is when I adopted him. He was a rescue corgi.
And how'd you come to meet him?
What happened was I've grown up with corgis my entire life. My first corgi I got when I was a little kid, it was a corgi with the tail. That's a cardigan. Now, Pembrokes have the little nubby tail that wiggles. You know, the queen has corgis. That gives you an example of what a corgi is. And then we fell in love with corgis in the family. So anyway, I got Andrew J. because I had another corgi, and he died when I had my brain aneurysm.
Okay. All right. Stop there. Let's talk about brain aneurysm. You, brain aneurysm survivor, you're the founder of the Chicago chapter of the Brain Aneurysm Foundation.
Right.
You really originated this Chicago chapter and have kept it going for years and years. Tell us about your experience, because it kind of leads into how you met Andrew J.
Right. So I started the Chicago chapter of the Brain Aneurysm Foundation at the University of Illinois Hospital. It's a support group, and we also do events, and we raise money for the Brain Aneurysm Foundation. We're also doing a walk in Chicago, the first ever in Chicago, and we're going to be raising money. More information can be found on the Brain Aneurysm Foundation website. That's www.bafound.org. Anyway, I started that foundation, and I had this brain aneurysm. In 2004, it ruptured. The ironic thing about this was my brain aneurysm ruptured, and I had this dog named Bogey. And Bogey was a character. He was a fat dog. And I had him when I was on the air in radio. And he actually would sit in the news booth when I was on the air. And he was just a good dog, but he was fat. Because it was an ongoing joke that I used to, the only way I knew how to show Bogey love was to feed him. I mean, he ate once 12 bagels. So he was really a fat piggy. Yes, no. He was fat, but he was funny. And he wasn't very smart either. Anyway, so I had this rupture in Ohio, and Bogey, being fat, ended up throwing his back out. And he was paralyzed, as I was paralyzed, with my ruptured brain aneurysm. Bogey unfortunately died when I was in the hospital. So I came home from after my brain aneurysm, blind and paralyzed, to a box of urns of Bogey. So it was really, really a tough recovery, you know, recovering from a brain aneurysm, paralyzed, and
then
blind,
not to have your best friend.
And then not
there.
Have to rest your best friend. Yeah. So my mom stayed with me for months and months and months, and finally I was able to live on my own. And the decision was made, let's adopt another dog. Just to kind of have a dog around. I didn't want to live on my own without a dog. And so I contacted a rescue corgi group in Ohio, and they said, oh, we have this dog named Andy. He's kind of skittish. We think he's been abused. And I said, okay, bring him over. Well, he was a little character. He was skinny, by the way. So I thought, well, I have something better to work with than I can fatten him up, kind of. So anyway, he was sweet, but he had these soulful eyes. You could tell he had been abused. He was really wounded. You know, you'd put on a black baseball cap and he would start to shake, and you would take off a belt and he would look really horrified, and he wasn't good with men. So it was really sad, and I thought, hey, this guy needs help.
So you needed each other.
We both needed each other.
Yeah.
And the longer I was with him, the more he felt like he needed to protect me. I would walk downstairs. He would wait for me at the bottom of the stairs. And my girlfriends thought, he's watching out for you. You know, this is amazing. And I thought, well, okay, really? And he really started to watch out for me more. And we used to refer to him as the recovery dog, because it's the first dog I ever had after my brain aneurysm. And he kind of sensed that I was struggling, because I would walk with the cane, and then there'd be a curb that I'd have to step up on, and I would just sit there like, I don't know if I want to try it. And he would pull me over the curb.
Because you couldn't take the step.
Yeah. And no one ever trained him. No one ever trained him how to be a therapy dog, or, you know, the people that had him, we kind of sensed that he had been trained a little bit, but we weren't sure. So that's how it started.
And he would remind you to take your medication?
He would remind me to take my seizure meds, and that was a pretty amazing thing, because my alarm would go off and I would be on the computer working, and I was and he would jump on me, and I would say, in a minute, and he would jump on me, and I thought, wow, this dog's amazing. He won't let me miss my meds.
And there was an incident, and you write it so well. It's an easy read. It's a beautiful read. There was an incident, Janet, where you fainted.
Yes.
What happened?
I was in my yard pulling out weeds. It was hot. And actually, there's a funny part of the story. I passed out in the yard.
That's not the funny part.
No, I lived in Hyde Park. And I had a fenced-in yard. And, you know, we were on the street. It was on a street, so there were cars parked. And I passed out. And people were walking by. And I thought if I yelled help, someone would hear me. Well, no one heard me. And I was kind of lying there yelling help. And Andrew J. is sitting there. And I was really crying. You know why? Because there's a pile of dog poo next to me.
Oh, no.
And I'm thinking, oh, my God, is my face in dog poo? And that was the part I was like, oh.
And he starts barking.
And he's barking because he knows that, like, no one can hear me and no one can see me. And I'm waving my hand, help, help. And he starts to bark. And a young school kid walked by and said, ma'am, do you need help? And I said, yeah. And I kind of was like, I need to help get the poop away from me, too, is what I'm also thinking. And, you know, he got paramedics, and they climbed the fence, and he guarded, and he managed to get people to come and help me. And that was really amazing.
It's a heartwarming, it's a beautiful story.
And so the book, Andrew J., The Corgi Rescued Me, is the story of, with a lot of pictures of
great
Andrew
pictures,
J.
Yeah.
And you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what's your favorite one?
I think my favorite one is the
wearing
one.
Buddy ears here. That's
yes.
Yeah, you dressed your dog up, Janet.
Seriously, I really kind
of
humiliated. Yeah, no, my favorite one is the Kleenex on his hanging from his mouth. Or on his paw. Do you see that one?
Yeah.
Because Corgis, for some reason, love Kleenex. And he would go into the garbage and he'd come out and look at me like, what? And he'd have toilet Kleenex hanging from his mouth. I'm like, could you wipe it off? You know what I mean? That's one of my favorite pictures. And then the one where he looks out the car.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because he would he did that when we went to drive by Barack Obama's house once, and the Secret Service was like, "What are you doing?" I'm like, "Nothing."
Get your corgi off the property.
They look like their facial features. They kind of look like big dogs.
Yes,
and but on really short legs.
There are big dogs and little bodies, is what they're known as. Yes,
he's adorable. I don't want to give away the ending, but he was a wonderful part of your life.
Yes,
you don't want to give away the ending, do you?
Yeah, we can.
All right, go ahead.
Because most people, many people who follow him on...
Don't read the
back strange
cover
thing about
first.
Andrew J. is that he has such a following that some people have his face on their cell phone as the ringer. And as the, what do you call it, the screensaver.
The screensaver, yeah. So, but I like how you put it.
He went to the rainbow.
Crossed the rainbow bridge.
Yes.
Into the sky. And how old is he?
He was 14, although I was in denial of his age, and I took him to the vet, and they said, oh, he's getting up there. I go, yeah, he's 4.
Yeah.
And they said, oh, he was born in 2000. I go, yeah, he's 4.
Yeah.
He's in fourth grade. They go, Janet, 2000. I go, yeah.
That's funny. That's how I
that's kind of
how I talk about
it.
My age. So that's our age, I guess.
That's kind of how I was like playing it with me, and they were like, no, he's, no.
But he lived a wonderful life. He was a great companion for you.
Yes.
And you have a new dog named Rex now.
His name is Rhett, like Rhett Butler.
Rhett Butler, okay.
Yes. He's got a short attention span. He's 4 years old, and I'll say, sit. You know, can we talk? And what do you want to do? And he wiggles around. I'm like, oh, can you just focus? Can we focus?
That's kind of like some people we work with.
Yeah, exactly.
I know the feeling. I was a boss at
one
time.
Well, it's a huge success. Amazon giving it great ratings. As Steve always says, buy two copies. You're careless.
Yes.
You lose one. And we can get it on Amazon.com. And if people want to read more about you or learn more about your story, where can they go? Your website?
They can go to, they can follow my Facebook page.
Okay.
It's Janet Sutherland. It's under author, and they can follow that until I'll have a new website coming up, and they can follow my Facebook page on.
Are you gonna write another book?
Yes.
Okay, good. Not about anything in our past, about previous radio stations
Janet,
or antics.
That's a great idea.
No.
Janet,
no,
listen,
actually.
I will commission you.
He'll write the
foreword. To write a book about Andrea.
Seriously, I want to use this as a springboard for, that would be great to do like the radio stuff.
Okay,
there's a lot of nonsense.
That was a joke. That was.
No, I don't think that's a joke. I think it's a great concept. I think you would sell a lot of copies.
Congratulations on
Thank
your success.
You.
Janet
Thank
Sutherland.
You.
The book is Andrew J. The Corgi Who Rescued Me. And best of luck. More success
Thank
to you.
You.
Thank you, Janet. All right. More after this on WGN.